Today, Dave and Doug speak to an expert on the language of accounting and a success story from someone who had the courage to quit and find a better job. All that today on... Job Talk!
Welcome to Job Talk, where our job is to make your job more fun and profitable. My name's Doug Meinert.
I'm Dave Force.
And every week we talk with people around the country who are doing just what we all do, working for a living.
We're speaking with Andy Figthorn, former general manager at SeaWorld in San Diego, and prior to that was the general manager at SeaWorld of San Antonio, where Doug and I had the opportunity to work with Andy.
We're talking to all kinds of interesting people, some of whom have theme park backgrounds and some of whom have actual business backgrounds. You know, for all the people that you managed, you had to kind of explain numbers to from your lofty position. Do you have any cheap advice we can pass along to some of the people who call in?
Well, I would say, you know, that there is a mystique that's reflected in people's aversion. You know, they kind of freeze when they think about, you know, the word accounting, and people maybe are not numbers people, but they just really have an aversion to financial topics. And it is true that accounting is the language of business. And the further you go in management, further up you go in management, the more likely it is that you need to have at least some conversant ability to read a set of financial statements. And I think that's very difficult for a lot of people. But the fact are that for most people, they don't need to understand financial statements. They need to simply understand the aspect of what they control and what they participate in their daily work life. And understand that just that component, that they're controlling expenses or they're managing revenues, they're trying to grow revenues, whatever it is that they are trying to do, to simply focus on that. Having said that, it is good to have an appreciation of the overall business that you work in and understand how profitable it is and so forth, so that you have a knowledge base to gauge, is this an organization that I want to be committed to? Do they have a track record, that potential future that look promising for me in my career? So there is that aspect of kind of self-preservation that you need to understand the financial results and financial opportunity for the company you work in, even if understanding that doesn't, you know, help your current position within the company and help you perform in your current position, I guess is what I'm saying.
This isn't a story about Andy. It's a story about Andy's style that I learned from, and I have used this a number of occasions. In the very first meeting when Andy came to take over our park, he said, "I ask a lot of questions, but that's how I learn. Please don't be defensive about it. I'm not challenging you. I'm not questioning you. But that's how I learn, is by asking questions." And I was so impressed, because oftentimes people do get defensive when they're asked a question, as though they need to justify why they're doing something. And he just put it so clearly and so eloquently that people said, great. And it took us off the defense mechanism and was willing to share. And it was straightforward. I learn by asking. And so we didn't have to be afraid of the questions he was asking, because he wasn't trying to second guess us. It was his way of obtaining information. And I have used that numerous times since then. For that lesson, Andy, I sincerely appreciate it, because you made it so simple for people to understand.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think it's good for younger managers to, you know, to model their boss's behavior, see what's in a number of ways, not just finance ways, you know, what they're wearing and how they act and how they converse with their subordinates and their superiors and the people that they work across the organization with. But also to see what metrics are they following, what's on their dashboard, and that they understand, because what's on their dashboard may be above and beyond what it is that you individually are working toward and control and are a part of. But, you get that perspective. And the one good thing, you know, most bosses are, if they aspire to higher positions in the company, the organization is going to be looking to them to recruit someone for their position. So I think most bosses are eager, if they're not blockers, are eager to train that next level. And, you know, if someone expresses interest in what it is that they do, they're typically pretty open about sharing it. And that's a good way. Certainly the metrics, the dashboard is a good way to understand what's important to their boss. And you know, that should be things that are important to them.
Really well said.
While we have Andy on the phone, we're going to take advantage of it and have him explain to most of us some of the financial acronyms, what they stand for, and in simple terms, what it means. So Andy, go ahead and pick a handful of those for us and go ahead and illuminate us, please.
Sure. I'll go back to the income statement. So the amount of the economic activity for a company for a period of time, a month, a quarter, a year, the income statement. So you've got revenue at the top line, all the money that's coming in for your sale of goods and services in the organization, that's your revenue. And you subtract from that revenue the direct costs attributed to making that product or that service. So the physical inputs that went in, the labor that directly attributed to that person. Not the receptionist out front. He or she is not a part of the cost of goods sold or the maintenance department. They didn't actively contribute to that sale of goods and services. But the cost of goods sold, you subtract from the revenue, and that is your gross profit. And then all the other expenses of the organization, the overhead expenses, are in the operating cost category. And you subtract operating costs from gross profit, and you have pre-tax profit. So those are hard numbers, certain dollar amounts, the gross profit and the pre-tax profit. You want to compare your results to the budget, and perhaps you compare the results to the prior year, too. That's a normal way of looking at things. And a third way is to look at your profit margins. That's simply the percentage. That gross profit in dollars, express that as a percentage of the revenue. So what percent of the revenue falls down to the gross profit line, that comes down to the gross profit line? And by the same token, how many dollars come down to the pre-tax profit line after the operating costs, and express that as a percent of the revenue? And so not only can you compare how your revenue, your gross profit, and your pre-tax profit are growing in dollar terms year over year, which is important, it's also, what do your margins look like? What is the percentage of the revenue that falls down to gross profit and to pre-tax profit? How are those margins looking year over year? And that's an important barometer to see what's the health of this product or service that I have. Is it growing in dollars? And is it also growing in margins? That's the best of both worlds. If you can improve your margins and improve your revenue over time, boy, that's a very powerful product or service that you're delivering to your customers. So those are important metrics. There's another metric on the income statement that many companies use and is increasingly important in the financial community, and that means that operators need to understand it as well. And it's a real tricky acronym, and it's called EBITDA, and it stands for earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. Now that is a mouthful. So I mentioned there's revenue. There's cost of goods sold, the direct costs attributable to that revenue, and then there are a series of operating costs. And when I say operating costs, they're the costs of running the operation. Well, there's also some costs that are, and I mentioned earlier about capital expenditures, amounts of money that the company spends for assets that have a longer-term life. They're not an operating cost, not something that you did this year like a maintenance expense, but a building that you built, a piece of equipment that you acquired. Accounting rules require is that you depreciate that asset. If you bought something for $10 and it has a useful life of 10 years, you depreciate that $1 per year over the 10 years. Now, that depreciation is something that is recorded on the income statement, that $1 of annual depreciation, but it's not a cash expense. And so the idea is that you take the depreciation, and there's another type of depreciation is called amortization. It's the same concept. And you also take away the taxes after the pre-tax profit. You have to pay taxes to the federal government and most state governments. And so the term, again, going back to what EBITDA stands for, earnings before interest, and interest is another component. That if a company is borrowing money, there's an interest expense. And if you think about it, that's not directly attributable to the operation of the company and the goods and services that you're selling. So you want to have basically your earnings before interest that you're paying on the loans and so forth, taxes that you're paying to the government, depreciation and amortization that relate to capital expenditures that you made. So you strip all that out. It's earnings before all these things. So it's strictly the goods and services that you're delivering this year, minus the direct expenses, the cost of goods sold attributable to delivering those goods and services, and the operating costs of keeping the lights running, keeping the organization going, paying all the overhead costs. That's what EBITDA is.
So in other words, for a simple-minded person, I'll use myself as an example, what you're saying is, this is my earnings before the things I have very little influence over versus the things I do have direct influences over. correct? Is that a good way of putting it?
That's exactly right. And EBITDA, if your business was a checkbook and you had a zero balance at the end of the year, your EBITDA would be what's the balance that I had at the end of the year, positive or negative, before you had to pay the interest to the bank, the taxes to the government, and had this non-cash accounting charge related to depreciation and amortization. So EBITDA is the ultimate pre-tax cash flow that the business is generating, positive or negative. And that makes it very powerful because at the end of the day, cash is, there's a term in business, cash is king, and that you're trying to manage for cash flow. And this is a kind of a shorthand way of looking at your pre-tax cash flow. Of course, the reality is the business does have to pay the interest, it does have to pay taxes, and it does have to make capital expenditures. But this is the starting point. You're in the business of selling that good and service, and this is the pre-tax cash flow that those activities are generating.
Great stuff, Andy.
Thanks again, Andy. Sincerely appreciate your time, sir.
Absolutely. My pleasure. I'd love to do it anytime.
Okay. Yep. Have fun.
Be good.
See you guys.
Bye. And we're back. We're having so much fun talking with various people today. Here's a unique job coming up. Doug, who do we have?
So this morning we're talking with Tracy LeWand, who is Programming and Events Manager for the Hemisphere Redevelopment Corporation in San Antonio, Texas. How are you, Tracy?
I'm great. How are you guys this morning?
We are awesome.
Tracy is had worked at operations at the SeaWorld in San Antonio Park. One of the things that I can personally attest to is her growth experience. I don't know exactly when she started, but I know she was a young girl. She's about the same age
1995, way back.
Yeah, about the same age as my son. I remember they were both in operations for a while. Trace is one of the people I got to watch grow and develop and turn into a phenomenal manager of people. And I recognize that, Tracy, you're one of those people that started with a particular company,
yep,
progressed through that company, up through, you know, the chain, the ladder, and you earned it. It wasn't handed to you, without a doubt. I know that you were very much involved with the training of employees and development, et cetera, et cetera. So you have all of this experience, knowledge, and wisdom, and you had the security of working with a company that you totally understood, you believed in the mission, and you executed that mission, and then one day decided, well, I'm going to take this and go outside my comfort zone.
I did.
That's not unusual for a lot of people, and it can be nerve-wracking, but at the same time, it can be adventuresome. So what I'd like you to do, if you're willing, is kind of share some of the transitional anxieties and some of the things that you realize afterwards that I didn't need to be as anxious about that as perhaps I thought I needed to be, so for those people that might be experiencing the exact same thing.
Absolutely. Well, one word describes the feeling that I felt once I made the decision to get out of my safety net and leave SeaWorld after I had been there for 20 years. The one word is terrifying. In capital letters, exclamation point. I mean, there's no better word to describe what I was feeling. And then it was really a roller coaster of emotions. I would be excited and exhilarated about doing something brand new and having a new experience. And then 2 seconds later, I would say to myself, what am I doing? I have all these years built up. I knew SeaWorld literally like the back of my hand. And, you know, the way of doing things, the culture, it was ingrained in me. I had just grown up in it. And so it really was a roller coaster of emotions once I decided to leave. But now looking back, this is, I'm hitting my 6 month mark at Hemisphere. It really was the best decision I've made career-wise. I am getting to just experience new worlds. I'm still doing the core things that I've always done. But those first few weeks, I mean, I can't even tell you, I think my knees were shaking when I walked the store that first day that I started. And for several reasons, you know, at SeaWorld, there was 3,000 plus team members. And so you could be one in a crowd.
Uh-huh.
There's 9 people here at Hemisphere. So there was going to be an interaction with every single person. And no matter how old or young you are, those questions of, will they like me? Will they think that I was the best person for the job now that I've started? Well, I have common interests. And I think that one of the most terrifying things is that I had grown up with the people at SeaWorld for so long. They were not only coworkers, they were friends, they were family. And so I knew that making a change was going to be very different, that I wouldn't have those friends every day that I would see.
You bring something up that, if I can inject here, is that I had a similar situation after I had retired from SeaWorld. And then I was fortunate to be tapped to be the general manager to to open Morgan's Wonderland. The similarity is the fact that I went from a company with a lot of resources, meaning people, knowledge and wisdom, and if no matter what the issue was, you could turn around and someone would have the wherewithal to provide an answer.
Yep.
Then you go to a small area and you realize that all your problems are kind of magnified because it's just you. And you're the one that has to come up with the solution, and whether it works or doesn't work, it's extremely magnified because of the small number of people. So suddenly I was a big fish in a small pond.
Right.
And it was unnerving, but at the same time, you have to admit it is gratifying because it's just you.
Yes.
It kind of builds your confidence.
Funny story to that. We, prior to grand opening, we thought, let's order some radios. Radios, when you work in operations department, is like, it's a part of you. It's second nature. Use it for communication all the time. And when I walked in and they said, oh, we don't have radios, I was like, what? We have to have radios, even if there's only two of us. I mean, we must have a radio. So I ordered radios for grand opening, and all the boxes arrived, and we ordered enough for the volunteers for that day. And I thought, okay, well, who's going to put these together? And I'm like, oh, I guess that's us. Or, you know, anything that has come in, I'm like, what? I need to put a bookcase together? There's not, nobody can do this?
Sort of.
But it has been great because I can do it all. Things that I didn't think I could do or that I haven't done in years. But, oh, you kind of pick it up just like you had done it yesterday. You just kind of realize that it's your time to step up. So it's been great.
Tell us a little bit about the programming and event side of things. You know, what kinds of programs are you putting together? And I'm sure that's a fun part of the business.
It is. It's been really rewarding just starting. It literally grassroots. Nothing was in place when I started. I came in and they said, okay, it's yours. Start to build it, which was nerve-wracking and exhilarating at the same time. But we're doing really a focus on the arts, education, play, a lot of cognitive play. And so really getting children to be creative with their imagination. We have 6 pup tents, and they showcase some art and the star constellations underneath if you lay under them at night. But kids are also learning about the star constellations. They're then using them as an obstacle course. They're small enough that you can jump over them and do flips on them. So, really focusing on that type of programming. We just launched our 2 weekly programming activities. And one of them is going to be, you may have heard of them before, Imagination Playgrounds.
Uh-huh.
Essentially, they're large, big blue blocks. And already, just from the Facebook invite that we've done, social media posts, we have 834 people that are interested. And we were hoping that we'd have 10. So this might be, you know, immensely popular when we launch it next Monday.
Oh, what fun. What fun. You know, I love those two words juxtaposed, cognitive play. You know, there's a purpose behind the fun, much like jobtalkradio.org. We're talking this morning with Tracy LeWand, who is Programming and Events Manager for Hemisphere Park in San Antonio, Texas.
Tracy, the experiences that you currently have, you have a toolbox, if you will, of things that you learned previously working at SeaWorld for numerous years. And as you mentioned, you've been 6 months on the job now at Hemisphere. I know you're so reliant on your toolbox, but what new tools have you discovered in the past 6 months?
New tools have been that I can now use my people skills, having worked with a very diverse group in the operations realm at SeaWorld. It wasn't just operations related. There was many different departments that we had to interact with. I've taken those skills. I'm using them, but in a new way. Completely, it's on my own. I have to reach out to the mayor's office. I have to reach out to city council members. I have to reach out to a variety of other organizations that we could potentially partner with. And I am the voice of Hemisphere as far as we want you to be at Hemisphere. We need your education-based programming, or we need your money or your time or your extra hands. And that has been a whole new sphere of experience for me. I was never that person. I was the background person at SeaWorld, or the execution day of person. And so that's now a main component of my job here at Hemisphere. So it really has just built my self-confidence that I am that picture of what we want to be.
You know, you bring up something I was going to get into. And the way I always envision things, no matter what the project might be, consists of 3 things: the concept, the design, and the implementation. And not everybody has the skills to do all 3. Usually people have expertise in 1 of those 3, and maybe 2 of those 3, but very few people have expertise in all 3. And as you mentioned, most of your career at SeaWorld, You were the implementer.
Absolutely.
Somebody said, come up with an idea, someone designed what it was going to be, and then hand it over, and Tracy makes it happen. Now you're discovering more of the design aspect of things.
Yes.
That's what I hear you saying, is right, we need to talk to the city. How are we going to make that happen? So you have to come up with the design of how do you communicate with your donors and the city, et cetera, et cetera. So that's new tools for you.
It is new tool. I was always on the SeaWorld side. It was somebody else had thought about the program or the idea or the mission, and I just had to roll it out. I had to make it happen. It had already been conceptually thought of. The program pieces had been designed. I'm on the flip side of that now. I'm doing all of those three components to make it happen. My first week in a staff meeting, I said, you know, I have this really great idea for story time. I'd like to do it weekly. I'd followed by the story time. I'd like to do a craft activity with a child that reemphasizes the storyline. And I was waiting for all of them to say, because I had always just been accustomed to, it needs to go through several levels before we get it approved. And they just looked at me like there was dead silence. And they said, we're not in programming. You know, I'm the business person and I'm the marketing person. You do whatever you want.
That's great.
It was very eye-opening. I don't need to wait on anybody else to move. I, you know, can think of it. I can let them know, pitch it, and then make it happen.
Well, I can hear in your voice the fun and excitement of what you're doing. You know, what's so great about this new position for you is you're making the transition in two ways. You're making the transition to some of your roots where you have to be the person who puts together the radios. Congratulations on that, by the way.
Yeah.
But you're also making that great transition into leadership because now you're thinking at the concept level and you're connecting the dots between, you know, between the money and the operation and, you know, the product itself. And so all in one, you've got this opportunity to be all of those things and to continue to grow your career.
So let's finish with this, Tracy. Let's go back to the original concept of the transition. Thinking back on it now, I'd like you to share one example of something that you learned you need to be better prepared for in the transition, and another one of what you wouldn't have to be apprehensive about. So someone going through the same thing, if you could give them two pieces of advice, here's what you ought to be kind of bolstering up on, and here's something, don't worry about it, you've got that covered. What would be those two things in your case?
Well, I think one, it seems to be redundant. People often say it very often, but you need to be confident in your skill set. Don't underestimate the experience that you've had. And I did do that a little bit for myself. I didn't know if it was going to be enough. I didn't know if it would be what they were looking for. And a part of it may have been just because I wanted it so bad that it seemed like it was just the perfect fit for what I wanted to do in my second career. But I definitely, looking back, wish I would have felt just that confidence that everything, every experience that I had encountered at SeaWorld had just better prepared me for the next piece of my life and my career. And I'm sorry, what was the second part to your question, Dave?
And what was it that you weren't as prepared for? You know, perhaps, as you said, you've been at SeaWorld for 20 years and suddenly you're interviewing, not just talking to somebody for a promotion, but now it's a brand new job.
Fantastic point. I had sat on many interview panels on the opposite end, but I had not interviewed in 20 years. And so it took a lot of making sure that I had researched the organization, that I really, before I even applied, that I was in line with what their mission and their goals were, because having worked at SeaWorld for so long, I believed in everything they did, and I wanted to feel that same passion at the next job that I took. So it wasn't just going to be, I need a job, any job, because I knew I would need that passion as I transitioned into that position. And people can feel it when you're talking about it, if you're into it or if you're not. So making sure you do the research on where you're applying, make sure that it aligns with your career goals, your life goals, your personal goals even. For me, it was very personal. The park is an all-accessible park, and that was really important for me. Part of the reason why I was leaving was I have a special needs little boy, and it was just too many hours and too much stress, and he's a huge part of my life. And so I wanted to transition into something that I knew was also doing good and that was all accessible for individuals who are in a wheelchair. And so seeing what they're doing and the pieces that are available to my son in the park was fantastic. So definitely do the research on where you're applying. And it's very important for me to see my body language, to see if I was using my hands too much, to see what impression I was giving while I was answering questions. So I just went over some basic answers out loud in the mirror. So those are two huge things that I would recommend for somebody who's getting ready to transition. Do your research. See what image you're portraying when you're answering those questions.
That is such great advice, and those are great theatrical principles that you've applied to the workplace to study yourself and your body language and how you're coming across. Well, we are thrilled to have had this conversation. It's so great to talk to somebody who has found the perfect opportunity, perfect way to employ all these great skills, and you bring something that's really important to all of us, that's that work-life balance. Put your priorities first, and you did, with your son and with your family. That's just fabulous.
Thank you. It's been wonderful, and I've got nine my new friends who will soon be just like family. We're already on that road. I'm the hugger in the office. They already know they're going to get a hug as soon as I walk in. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much, Tracy. You have a great day, and we'll check in with you from time to time to see how things are going.
Thank you so much, Doug and Dave. I appreciate it. Have a great week.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for spending time with us today. We hope to hear from you next week.
Yeah, in the meantime, leave us a note on the blog and or send us a note at dave@jobtalkradio.org or doug@jobtalkradio.org.
Dave takes the good notes, Doug takes the bad notes.
I take the high road, Dave takes the low road.
It's a journey. It's a four-wheel drive journey. Hey, thanks again for being with us on jobtalkradio.org. We hope that you'll go to our website, leave a note, post a blog, send us an email. jobtalkradio.org.
That's jobtalkradio.org.